Hello, and welcome to today's teaching entitled Rise Up. My name is Melissa Logson. I serve as associate pastor. First off, when Renee originally assigned the end of Acts chapter 9 to me, I was like, oh great, bringing someone back to life? How am I going to teach about this? To which my husband, Steve, jokingly had the idea that I could just bring some dead bodies from the local morgue over and pray over them. Yep, thankfully that is not an idea that I am going to pursue today. However, I did start to think about my own life and the resurrection of sorts that God has done in my own life. Honestly, those things are actually have been just as impactful to my life, as seemingly miraculous as someone being physically dead and being brought back to life. Can you relate? Is there a situation that comes to your mind that something has changed, or if it were to change, it would be just as shocking as seeing a dead person come back to life? When we read Bible stories of people coming back to life, I think it can be a little easy to just gloss over it and take it for granted. We can say, oh, look, here's another resurrection. Of course this is happening. God's in the life-giving business. And because it's so not a part of our everyday life, we move on. We gloss over it. It's not really that relatable to us. And this story, tucked in for just a few verses in the end of Acts chapter 9 about Tabitha, well, we don't even hear about her again. It's just another person that Peter interacted with very briefly in his ministry. And so for that very reason, I would like us to slow down today and sit with the story and see what we can glean from Peter, from Tabitha, and how their story can apply to us today. And I believe this resurrection story didn't just impact Tabitha's life, but Peter's as well, and also all those in the community around them that heard of the resurrection, saw the resurrection of Tabitha. We learned that Tabitha spent her life doing kind things, caring for the poor, making garments for widows. And after her resurrection, we see that many people believed in Jesus' resurrection life. Both before and after this resurrection moment, Tabitha's life makes quite an impact. Peter, who we've been following through the New Testament, following as he follows Jesus, as he struggles with his faith, we see him as part of Jesus' inner circle. We see how Peter got a front row seat to Jesus' miracles, including raising a girl to life. We know that Peter's been commissioned to go and tell the good news to all. And Tabitha and her community become part of Peter's story. Another thing about resurrection stories and healing stories, it can be really easy to look at it and just think, it was instantaneous. And maybe it is at moments. But also, I believe there's times where we can see observable stages, multiple steps, a process of bringing life and healing, both as the person being prayed for and prayers around that person. And to that point, also the person having the healing or resurrection, it rarely happens in just a vacuum of just them and God. We see not just someone praying for them, but sometimes also a whole community around them, friends, mourners, people of faith, all involved in the resurrection story. A few resurrection healing stories that popped into my mind throughout scriptures. In 1 Kings, when Elijah goes and prays over a woman's boy that has died, he stretches over that boy three times and cries out to the Lord. In Ezekiel, we read about that prophet who God is asking to look at this valley of just dry bones and then to prophesy. And then step by step, the bones came together, and then the sinews, and then the flesh, and then the skin. And yet there was more that God wanted to do. And so God had Ezekiel prophesy to the breath. And then there was breath. Then there was life. We see Jesus in Mark 8 dealing with one of many blind people that Jesus dealt with during his ministry. In this story, he takes a man by his hand. He leads him out of the village. He spits on the man's eyes. He lays his hands on the man. He asks him if he's seen anything. When it's not great vision yet, Jesus places his hands on the man's eyes again. And then his eyesight has been fully restored and seen clearly. Again, a process. So when we look at the story of Peter and Tabitha, we can see a process to her resurrection. Disciples take time to prepare her body for burial. They lay her in an upstairs room. Believers go and reach out to Peter. They send two men to ask him to hurry up without delay. Peter goes back to Joppa with these men. Peter takes time to listen to the widows as they weep, as they share and mourn about how kind Tabitha was and all the garments that she had made for them. Peter takes a solitude time to pray. He kneels down and prays by Tabitha's dead body. And then he speaks to her body and says, "Tabitha, rise up." Still the process. Tabitha opens her eyes. Then she sits up. Then Peter takes her by the hand and helps her to her feet. And then the believers come together, the widows, and they see that she's alive. And so many are blessed from the resurrection story, but it was not an instant moment. It was a process that many people were part of. Listening to Tabitha's story, two of my own resurrection stories popped into my mind. And it's a little scary to just share them. Might be a little less scary to pray over a dead body, frankly. But I feel like their stories worth sharing. Perhaps sharing my stories will lead to more unfolding resurrection in my own life. Perhaps it will be encouraging to other people. Strengthen your faith in Jesus' life-giving power. So before I begin with the stories, I invite you, if you feel comfortable, to close your eyes for a moment and picture yourself sound asleep. Listen as you sense someone calling you by name and telling you to wake up. Can you recall a moment like that? Maybe you were a student with your head down over your books. Maybe you were taking a Sunday afternoon couch nap. Maybe you were on the city bus and you were about to miss your stop. In that moment, can you recall how disoriented it is to be woken up from such a sound sleep? That moment of just trying to figure out where you're at, that bizarre mix between what is real reality? Is it the dream you were just in? Or is it this place you suddenly find yourself waking up? I had a similar feeling earlier this week. During one of my prayer times, I heard God call to me, "Melissa, wake up. Wake up, Melissa, wake up." Of course, I was physically awake. God was calling to my soul, my mind to awaken. I had asked God what the truth was about a fear I was dealing with. And before God spoke the truth to my heart, God made sure I was awake to hear it. And then God said, "You are not a child anymore." See, many of my adult fears are leftovers from childhood. And while there was self-preserving aspects to these fears, perhaps they don't serve me as well as an adult as when I was a child. Maybe there's another way. My first story is a resurrection from fear. It was a pretty significant fear that Jesus decided that he wanted to display his resurrection power in my life and call me into a freedom that helped me to extend Jesus's love more fully into my community. To some, you might think that this fear I'm going to share is a little silly, and maybe it is, but I was extremely afraid of roller skating, like terrifyingly so. However, I have a pretty good story of how I ended up with this fear of roller skating. See, I was in fourth grade and I had this fabulous plan. My plan was to get my friends together and us to put on our roller skates and make a choo-choo train and roller skate together on a sidewalk covered in ice. Well, you can imagine how that might go down, a whole bunch of kids on roller skates on a sidewalk that's covered in ice. But never fear, I had a grand plan for this. I already had a safety plan in place. I had instructed my friends that when and if we were to fall, that I will yell "split" right before we land to the ground. And we were all supposed to separate. Sounded like a really great plan. Until my little sister, when I called "split," she didn't fall off to the side. She fell right on top of me. And my wrist ended up broken in the process. And so, because of that moment, I went from being a little bit of a daredevil on roller skates to frightened to the point of holding the edge of the railing around the rink when forced to do just a little bit of roller skating with people. Most of the time, I just stayed and hung out in the snack area. So I'm telling you this story, and really, I hope you agree with me. It's, in the grand scheme of life, this isn't like the worst fear to have. It's not that big of a deal, it seems. But Jesus didn't want me to continue to live with this fear. So here's how Jesus, in stages over time, and definitely more drastic than I would have thought necessary, helped free me from this fear. See, I received an invite to play roller derby, not just once, but repeatedly. Once I was in Champaign, and I just kindly turned down the offer. I don't know why the girl invited me. I mean, she saw me in roller skates, but I know she didn't see me on the rink. I was just hanging out with the youth group girls and chatting with them as they snacked. Fast forward a few years, I'm at in Peoria, and I literally run into this girl, had a car accident in a gas station parking lot, and she invited me to roller derby. I ran into her, not so literally, again at a coffee shop. She invited me again. She did not know that just the thought of roller skating made my palms sweat and my knees weak. But then Jesus showed up in my prayer time and gave me a vision. You know that expression, when pigs fly? Only the pig was on roller skates. And I laughed and I agreed. I was like, yep, when pigs fly, I'll skate. But deep in my heart, I knew Jesus was inviting me to walk away from the fear and join roller derby. I don't know why God didn't want to just relieve this fear by just encouraging me to go roller skating for amusement every once in a while. Why did it have to be roller derby? So you can imagine, Jesus took away the fear of roller skating. I ended up going to roller derby boot camp, getting selected to the team, practicing with them. And honestly, it was so much fun. I enjoyed learning to weave and bump and whip and place my skates one over the other to make those sharp turns around the rink. And slowly I built relationships with the other derby chicks. My experience was that it was a pretty alternative group of gals, pretty hardcore. They didn't trust very easily. I had to earn their trust before I had the right to speak into their lives. So over time, as I went to the parties and the bars with them and practiced with them, I continued to build those relationships. Steve joined the security team for the bouts. Eventually, I ended up with a shoulder injury, ironically, not from roller derby, but from another car accident. So I became a non-skating official. We were still part of the derby league. And over time, I got to pray for several gals and bring words of life and encouragement to many of them. I feel a bit like Tabitha. Having a resurrection and helping others, having more people know God's goodness. And I feel a little bit like Peter, being taken further and further out of my comfort zone to reach others Jesus calls me to reach with his love and life. My second story is one of a repressed trauma. Much of who I am had been dead and buried along with the trauma that was so bad that I had repressed it. So all the freedom and the joy and the laughter. Instead, I had a lot of fears and anxieties reigning in my life. Seemingly irrational, but overall, I felt like I was doing okay going through this life. Then when the trauma came to light, it showed how all of these fears and anxieties, these neuroses, had been so impactful in my everyday life. I didn't know I needed a resurrection until then. I didn't know Jesus had other plans for my life. Other people, Jesus wanted me to extend his love and life to in my community. So here I was, this time in my 40s, and all of a sudden the repressed memory comes front and center. Once brought into the light, it so clearly explained all of my little anxieties and neuroses. Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. Jesus brought life and healing to me through love and prayer and support from Steve, my friends, counseling. And slowly, I started to experience freedom from anxiety and fear that had gripped me for most of my life. I began to live more boldly. And I believe the impact of this resurrection in my life has already resulted in me helping others more widely, more effectively. And I believe there will still be a further positive impact in my community as a result. How about you? Can you relate to my stories? Do you relate to Peter or Tabitha? Do you know someone in need of resurrection in their life? Perhaps you're being called to be a Peter for them. Is there someone that comes to your mind right now that could benefit from you speaking life to them, holding their hand, helping them up to walk again? Or maybe as I've talked, you sense that you have something dead that needs resurrecting in your own life. Perhaps it's a relationship, a dream, lost physical health and mobility. Perhaps there's a part of you that was fearless, bold, brave, generous, open, trusting, hopeful, and it seems dead and gone. If so, I encourage you to ask someone to pray for you, to hold your hand, to help you to walk again. In closing, I'd like to pray for us. Jesus, thank you that you are the resurrection and the life. May we see your love and power displayed in our lives and in the lives of those you call us to walk alongside. Amen.